May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, for you are our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. I feel really short. I have always hated being introduced to someone new and eventually being asked by them, "So, what do you do?" You know, even as a young woman years ago, I understood that what one does in terms of employment or work life says very little about who a person is, and that the question itself is designed to assign one to a value scale based on assumed financial resources. I can imagine the rich man of today's story would beg to differ with me. He would probably be ignorant enough to believe that what I owned or what I had in my bank account made me who I am, and he would be oh so wrong. Throughout the Gospel of Luke, we have heard the Spirit of God speak consistently what I might call an inconvenient truth. From Mother Mary's Magnificat of God bringing down the powerful from their thrones and lifting up the lowly, to the rich man whose abundant harvest caused him to tear down his barns to build new, larger ones so that he could eat, drink, and be merry, only to face the great equalizer, death, that night. And as a matter of fact, Luke's Jesus talks a lot about the blessings of poverty and the dangers of wealth. What? Does God have nothing good to say to the wealthy? Is there no good news to be found in Jesus' message this morning? I think it depends on how you identify yourself. And let's be clear. Our identities are always based on what we believe to be true. That's why you don't watch what people say, you watch what they do. Because what you believe to be true are the basis of one's actions. Actions follow suit. Last Sunday, we heard Jesus tell his disciples the parable of the dishonest steward. I have to admit, when I heard your sermon last Sunday, David, I thought, man, I'm glad I didn't get that text. Look the one I got. He ended his story with these words. To the dishonest steward, you cannot serve God and wealth. Today, Jesus is at it again, turning the world upside down, as God is apt to do, relating a tale of opposites to express an unrelenting truth. And that truth is this, that the holy, mysterious, and nameless one, whom we call God, does not identify us the way we tend to identify ourselves. What we believe in is what we worship, and what we worship is what holds center stage in our lives, and our actions follow. So we must be honest with ourselves and the truth of our condition. God doesn't care what we do. God cares about who we are. Becoming. Our true identity is in process on our earthly journeys. We don't stop being who we truly are until we close our eyes for the last time. And this is why being in process, there's nothing wrong with starting over. People are always worried about having to start over. Starting over is a good thing. And it helps make life make sense in life. In Jesus' tale, we are introduced to two men, one who is unidentified and nameless, and one whose name is Lazarus, which in the Hebrew means God helps or the one who is helped. Names were important in ancient times, as they are in many indigenous communities today. They were and are given to symbolize a desired character or a trait or a temperament. And that signifies for the one who has been named. So that's what your name represents, your character. And notice that the nameless one is not named, but is called the rich man. And the rich man, identified this way, says absolutely nothing about his temperament or his character. So just for context, I want you to know that at the height of the Roman Empire, it wasn't unusual for the poor to sit outside the house of the wealthy. As a matter of fact, archaeologists have found ruins abandoned in Pompeii where there are little benches outside of these gigantic, what would have been huge mansions. And this is where the poor would come, and they would sit there, or the lame or the disabled, they would be brought there. And the wealthy would send out food, a basket of food or even some money, because there was an unwritten but well-known moral code in the society. And that code was that those who had were responsible to, not responsible for, those who had were responsible to those who did not have. So Lazarus ends up at the rich man's gate. Now sure, the rich man eats well at his table, he wears the royal color purple, and lives in a gated community. He's probably oblivious to what goes around him, though. There's never an indication that he's even aware of Lazarus until after he dies. Between the sumptuously laden table and the gate, the rich man has chosen to establish and seal a boundary between his life and the life of the poor, hungry beggar. We might even say the well-dressed, well-fed, secure man has chosen to ignore the other man who he believes is so unlike himself. For the rich man, his ignorance is bliss, or is it? Who and what do we choose to ignore today? Do we ignore the indigenous community of Alaska, who's being flooded out by rising waters from the melting glaciers that we are responsible for creating, the first world, because of our need for convenience and comfort? Now, don't get me wrong, I like air conditioning as well as the next person. But y'all, it's not just about us. Do we choose to ignore the civilian population of Iran being killed without internet right now because the civilian population is protesting the death of a young woman who has been arrested and murdered by the police for wearing her hijab in an unapproved way? Are we choosing to ignore the 1,700 plus foster children in the state of Missouri who have been identified as missing? Yes, state officials have gone in and taken over 1,700 children from their families, and who knows where they are now? They've lost them. And you better believe some of them are probably being trafficked. You'd be a fool not to. What about the unarmed black man killed in his bed at 2:30 in the morning by police who burst into his house and shot him dead? In each of these cases, is our corporate willingness to ignore in order to remain in an ignorant bliss? And I ask you, are we there yet? The late Elie Wiesel, Nobel laureate, political activist, and Holocaust survivor, has been quoted as saying, "The opposite of love is not hate, it is indifference. Apathy is deadly. Not just to the one towards whom it's directed, it's deadly for the one who's wielding it. It creates a chasm between peoples who are different and yet who are the same. In God's sight, all are beloved ones. The Iranians, the Inuit, the black man who was killed. Even when we choose to ignore, God isn't ignoring. And God in us isn't ignoring either. Apathy? Hashtag ain't no Jesus in it. So regardless of what our physical senses tell us, our spiritual senses recognize that we are all one, that we're in a relationship of mutuality with each other. Listen, none of us got up, ate anything that we ate, put on anything that we put on, drove anything that we drove to get here, and wasn't dependent on how many thousands of people to get us here. If you think you did that by yourself, raise your hand. Our physical connections, the things that connect us physically in this realm to each other, is an expression of our spiritual connection to each other. When your spiritual senses start to tingle, you might start to feel afraid of the other. But the spiritual sense is telling you to wake up and experience the fear and ask the question, what is or who am I really afraid of? This is why we're here today. Because Jesus of Nazareth, who expresses the divine human union, is the heart of the good news. And he shows us what it means to be fully human and to live out of the divine image that is innate in each one of us. God is already in you. Are you in God? You are. Did you know it? Jesus is the archetype for our true identity. Jesus is who we truly are. Members of my tribe would say, Jesus Christ, not Jesus the person, but the Christ is our higher self. Our humanity, coupled with divinity, of that consciousness that we call God, perceives all of creation as good or very good. When we are being truly ourselves, we realize when we're living out of the Christ self, we realize we don't have to judge based on appearances. We're not ignorant of differences and their potential for conflict, but we realize that although we are different, I love what you said yesterday, God is, life is. And we're different, but we're a part of life, and it's a part of us. We're a part of God, and God is a part of us, of everything that is. So then, the question begs to be asked, why is it so hard to look at another person, any other person, and see them as an expression of God? I mean, I don't know. Could it be because our God is too small? Maybe we don't realize that when we call God, what we call God isn't God at all. Maybe we ought to ask God, who are you, God? And expect to hear a response. This past weekend, our church staff and vestry shared some meaningful time together, learning how to have one-on-one relational conversations as a means of forming community. No, I mean real community, not just a group of people. A common bond with each other. And for me, one of the most fascinating aspects of our time together was the deep listening and telling of stories whose themes were related to vulnerability. To vulnerability. Stories. Where we connected over vulnerability. I'm convinced that it is our vulnerability, that it's in that vulnerability that we recognize our connectedness to something greater. When you're at the bottom of the barrel and you know you can't get yourself up, there has to be something else. What if that something else, that connection, just might be showing up in the face of the person who sits next to you? Imagine that. I believe most of us over the weekend, if not all of us, experienced true holy presence, especially as we prepared for Holy Eucharist. So as our Rebecca was preparing Eucharist, it became for me a very perfect moment when I realized that the meal was our immaterial, was our tangible, material, sensory way of expressing what was true, which was intangible, immaterial, and extrasensory, like ESP extrasensory. The mystery of being human, you could feel presence. And if you've never been in a situation where you could feel God, where you could feel something other than you, and you know you're the only one in the room, you're missing out on life. The mystery of being human is the mystery of God living in us, and us and God, and identifying ourselves that way. And that's what makes us who we truly are. So I began by asking about what good news Jesus could have for the wealthy. And I asked this as statistics tell us that wealth disparity is larger than it's ever been in the entire world, and not just in the West, but over the whole world. And one commentator has noted, our society is more than twice as disparate as was the one to which Luke originally addressed his gospel. Think about that. The obvious questions provided by this tale are, where, who, and how are the rich man and Lazarus today? Why do we aspire to affluenza of the former and scapegoat or ignore the misery of the latter? And how long will we live peaceably with the chasm that's between us? Suffering is not a part of the kingdom. So I ask these questions of us. I ask my own personal question daily. And I wrestle with it, and I would commend it to you. When shall I learn? When will we learn who we truly are? Believe it, and then act on that belief. Because when we do that, Christ would have returned. Don't look in the sky for Jesus to come back. Jesus is sitting here, Christ, the person Jesus walks with us in his ascended form. But the Christ, that culmination of the divine and material world, heaven and earth together, is already here, already in you. If you don't spend any time in the stillness, you'll never know. But when you pay attention in the present moment to your gardening or your cooking or playing with the kids or whatever you're doing, somehow something touches you and you know that you're in a holy moment. They don't have to be interspersed. They can be all the time. And when enough of us, a critical mass of us, get to the point of understanding that every moment is holy, the whole world will change. All it takes is for each one of us to become the change that we want to see in the world. Amen.